Good morning, everyone. This is Judge Sam Buckley, and we'll get started right away. We've got a full agenda. Blanco?
Yeah, take roll, please. Thank you. I will take roll. Thank you, Judge Buckley. Judge Buckley, you're present.
I am.
Rebecca Fleming?
Present.
Judge Cope?
Here.
Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Thompson has indicated that he is not available today. Sherry Carter?
Here.
Nancy Everhart?
She'll be on.
Via telephone, so hopefully we'll check in with her. Mike Planet?
I'm here.
Neil Taniguchi indicated he would not be available today. With David Yamasaki?
Here.
And Nancy, have you joined the call?
She will not be joining. She will not be joining.
Well, she will not be joining. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 members.
Yeah.
I believe we have a quorum.
Okay.
We can proceed. I said that this is an open meeting and it is being recorded, so please identify yourselves for the benefit of all that are participating. I do want to, before we start, do the items and any motions regarding minutes. I wanted to introduce a new deputy director, Fran Muller, here, who is to be supporting all of the kickback issues going forward. She has extensive years of state service and public service, and is coming here as a great asset to the judicial branch and the budget services. And so we welcome her, and then she'll be observing today and then diving headlong in. And if there's anything you wanted to say, Fran, about your...
I'd like to say good morning to everyone, and we're very excited to be here and look forward to working with and supporting all of you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Zlatko. So let's move on to the minutes of the October 8, 2019 meeting can be found on page 4 of the materials. Any discussion? Any issues with it? Entertain a motion?
Approved.
Second?
Second. I'm sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
I said with enthusiasm. any opposed? Okay, not hearing any. Written public comment was not received. Do we have any in-person public comment?
We are not aware of anybody who signed up for providing any public comment.
Okay, that then concludes the public comment portion. So we'll get right to item 1, operating expenses and equipment, OE and E.
Okay.
Leah, please.
All right. Yeah, so I am Leah Rose Goodman from the Office of Core Research, and the action item in front of the committee today is a under the title of operating expenses and equipment. So just as a reminder, last year the committee had undertaken a review of all of the general ledger accounts that are factored into the workload formula, mainly to confirm that when we talk about funding, the funding allocation and the funding needs, that we were talking about parallel systems, essentially. And through that review, one of the byproducts was a realization that a similar review needed to be conducted for the accounts that constitute the OE&E, or the operating expenses and equipment. The OE&E factors into the workload formula as a per FTE, per full-time equivalent assessment, and it factors in expenses such as copiers and other types of items of that nature. We realized that when the initial workload formula was put together in approximately 2012, that there were many OE&E accounts that required additional research, and there wasn't the time. The timeline was so constricted for work that there wasn't the time really to go through the accounts thoroughly, and so it was decided that a general review of those accounts should follow this general ledger review that took place last year. I really want to acknowledge that the group of CFOs who came together to do this work under the direction of Sherry Carter in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you. And actually, I brought Jerry Cortez, my Chief Deputy of Administration, and Christine Padilla, who kind of led the group of experts. So thank you for that. They're here to see our process for getting these approved.
Yeah, absolutely. And Christine was kind enough to let me join many of the phone calls that the group took over the past year or so. And the CFOs or the financial staff, and I think I have them all listed: Contra Costa, Orange, Monterey, Los Angeles, of course, Lake, and Tehama. Got together, 1 hour phone calls over the lunch hour typically for a period of many months, and, you know, they would each kind of batch out a group of 100, 200 accounts to review line by line. It was really an extensive process, and I think they were very, very thorough. From the Judicial Council staff perspective, it's, you know, I personally don't have the familiarity with the accounts and how the information gets entered and utilized, so this was absolutely the essential to making this review comprehensive. So I've kept my report relatively short because Christine and her team had put together a summary document that contained the process that they went through, the recommendations, as well as a listing of accounts where they had, where they are recommending something that was different from the original designation that was made back in 2012 or so. So the primary recommendation in front of the committee today is to determine, is to number one, approve whether or not to adopt the recommendation made by this committee. And there are two kind of ancillary issues that came up as part of this review, very similar to the work that was done on the general ledger account. One is that the group found that there are differences in how courts are utilizing certain general ledger accounts, and in some cases it's there are real difficulties in determining what constitutes a one-time expenditure versus an ongoing expenditure, and the CFO group really grappled with the issue of whether or not that mattered or how they should consider a one-time expense. So a follow-up recommendation is that there be some ongoing work through the Court Executives Advisory Committee to you know, just confirm that the accounts are being used in a consistent manner. And I want to clarify, it's not to say that they are recommending that courts can't utilize coding as a way of organizing their business, but the way that those accounts map up into the funds that we use in the workflow format standardized across all the courts. Another recommendation that's very similar is just to make this review an ongoing process rather than do this in these 7-year increments, to just make this more consistent and ongoing work. And finally, the committee had also reviewed and just affirmed that FMS has made a decision to apply statewide CPI to O&E, and they have, you know, affirmed that that should be the approach taken, although they also recommended that this committee continue to monitor the use of statewide CPI and whether or not that might be modified in the future.
So, Leah, do you mind if I clarify a couple of things for people that may not be into the weeds like I have been, thanks to Chrissy, for the last year or so. Just to take us back to why we're doing this, we started with the revenue lines to decide what should be included in the workload formula, previously known as WAFM, and now we're looking at the expenditure side to decide what should be included in the workload formula. And so that's the reason we're doing the review. Through that review, both on the revenue side, which was approved, and I think the council approved those changes already, right? Okay. Now we're looking at the expenditure side. I really strongly recommend that we have standard GL lines that are used for particular expenditures like we did on the revenue side, because we need to make sure that when we run reports that people are using consistent codes so that we can easily do this kind of work in the future, because it was very laborious to contact other courts and say, hey, we ran a report and saw that you had this big expenditure in this GL account. Nobody else is using it. Why did you use it? And so I think at the end of the day, assuming that we approve this, and I would strongly recommend we do, we need to come up with a sheet. This is to Judicial Council staff. We need to come up with a sheet that will tell the CEOs that beginning July 1, these new revenue GLs are to be used for these functions, and these new expenditure GLs are to be used for these functions, so that if there is any changes locally, they have time to do that, because we can't just rely on minutes from the TICFAC meeting or the Judicial Council meeting. We need to give direction. And I haven't seen that yet on the revenue side, even though it's been approved by the council. And I think part of it is we wanted to wrap it with this. So I, you know, that's kind of as a reminder of why we're here, and I think it's important for us to take the opportunity to clean up our banking records.
So I'm looking at page 9 of 49 of the materials, and those recommendations are laid out there. The language here is FMS should consider adopting the recommendations. Is it that FMS should recommend to TICFAC to adopt the recommendations, or is it at?
Oh, that would have been better. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Yeah, absolutely.
And then, okay. So,
hey, Judge, I'm sorry. I realized that I left out one of the last items on the recommendations.
Of course.
Recap that real quickly. Kind of to Sherry's point, the TCAF staff have been working on the general ledger review that had been done, and have been in contact with our team to figure out how to implement those things. The item 4 on here is one of the recommendations that came out of that general ledger review. So, they are finding that there are some, there's an inconsistency with the GL that's been made for civil transcripts, so they want to create one so that it can be aligned more correctly with that.
And can I explain why? Because I think CEOs who may be on the line will want to understand. So in the workload formula, of course, the revenues and expenditures have to line up, right? We all understand that. But for transcripts, the workload formula supports mandates. Civil transcripts are not mandated. So for those courts that hire reporters in civil, there is an offset that should be included in a separate GL, because criminal is already included in the workload formula, civil is not. So right now, because they're merged together on the revenue side, you can break them out on the expenditure side, but on the revenue side, criminal and civil are together. It needs to be separated, because the civil should not be included because it's an offset to non-mandated work. That makes sense? Okay. That's the reason.
Like for like.
Yes.
So, reviewing the information and the materials, it seemed like that was a revenue coming in.
Yes.
The subcommittee or the CFO committee was regarding expenditures.
Because we already did the revenues that's been approved by the council.
So this seemed to be something that would have been part of the revenue discussion, but it was
not. No, it was not part of the revenue because on the,
it was a follow-up to that.
It was a follow-up to that.
Okay, because it didn't seem to fit within the four squares, but it seemed important, though, to point out.
Yes, because how it came up is on the expenditure side, which are the court reporters that you've hired to provide in civil. There is a revenue component for that needs to be an offset to the expenditure, and civil is not mandated, so that workload has not been measured and included in the workload formula, which funds the trial courts. So it needs to be separated, the mandated criminal juvenile tribunal, from the non-mandated, which is why we need this separated.
So it was a bit of an aside from the primary work of the O&E group. And I had tried on page 8 of the meeting materials to separate out the topic as a follow-up to the general ledger review. We had contemplated whether we should just have two separate reports, and the topics were pretty
related.
We thought, you know what, I'm just going to merge the two items together. I realize now it probably seems like two separate issues, and in some ways they are separate, but they are related to this general issue of consistency and the accounts.
This is a help to the courts that currently provide court reporters in civil. to help those courts because the revenue is an offset to those expenditures. And right now, you can't count it because it's morphed in with the mandated.
An extension of the question I had a moment ago, ultimately the council approves this, is that correct?
It would.
Okay,
right.
So it would be that FMS recommends a take back to recommend to the council that it adopt the recommendations that are here, okay?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So with that, yes.
And we just technically, it's no longer called the Trial Court Administrative Services Division, it's the Branch Accounting and Procurement, since a reference to recommend that back into the JCC, so that's an update on number two.
And I think number one needs to be clarified to say that we recommend to, yes, include or exclude. No, that's correct. As recommended, yeah.
Okay, so with the modifications that the first sentence would be that FMS recommends to take back to recommend to the council to adopt the recommendations made by the OE&E review group. And then an item two, change JCC Trial Court Administrative Services to
Branch Accounting and Procurement.
Okay. Is that BAP?
Yes.
Oh, good. Great. Entertain a motion.
Yamasaki, I would move approval.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a further refinement, we, timing-wise, we had set this up to present at this meeting so that we could make this decision with the 2021 allocation. So
okay.
We expect the allocation to be effective July 1, should that be the direction. But I think it would be helpful probably to make that specific in the recommendation. So if approved,
it would, yes, I agree, effective fiscal year 2021.
Yep. So why don't we say to adopt the recommendations made by OE&E Review Group, comma, to be effective as of 2020 to 2021 fiscal year, as follows. Okay.
Yep.
Friendly amendment.
Friendly amendment.
Okay. Need a second?
No second.
Okay. Discussion. Any questions? Comments? Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So let me echo the compliments. I have had the joy of working with Christy, so I'm not surprised that she and all the others did such phenomenal work.
But we don't have favorites. We don't have favorite employees.
No, Sherry Carter does not have
favorite.
Some of us. Everyone's smiling if you're on the phone. Let me ask, on number two, recommending to SEAC, is there a plan to bring a formal presentation to SEAC and educate them in advance of July 1?
The division director in charge of BAP, the Branch Accounting and Procurement, has put those pieces into motion and is kind of
right
at the ready waiting for this group to conclude their work today.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So he would put the memorandum and training materials together for the CEOs that include his suggested changes as well as these.
I will confirm that
okay
with him, but that seems to be what he's got lined up.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Timing-wise, and if the council's going to adopt this, it would be at what meeting?
May.
The May meeting.
Council meeting, right. We'll take it to take back in March.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there a SEAC meeting between May and July?
I don't think SEAC meeting should do it.
You
I
don't?
Think that, no, I think once we have the training materials, because I've already mentioned it, at least at two SEAC meetings that it's coming, maybe even more than that.
And there's an April executive.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah, there probably should be a presentation there.
But, you know, I've done it before. It doesn't hurt to remind them, but I think the training memo is the best thing.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
We're going to do one adjustment. We're going to move to number five. Leah, if you don't mind, there's been the deal with flights. So if we move to item five, and that is workload formula adjustment request process. I apologize. I should have given you a note, Leah. I apologize.
No, no, no. That's okay. That's okay.
It just came to me.
Oh, this is the average to go. Yeah. We're taking this out of
All right. So this one for the ARC, I've got a PowerPoint just so we have some graphs.
Pull that up. 5 can be found on page 38 of the materials. We need to make sure we know. If we can hear, make sure we can hear Kristen, I should present. Is there a microphone near you, or should we get?
Can you all hear me? I will speak loudly, or do you want a microphone?
Mostly the folks on the phone, I think, that we need to make sure can be heard.
Which I'll speak about in a little while. Overall, we do
we do recommend that the San Francisco Superior Court be assigned to be changed to Cluster 3. Also recommend that any reanalysis of the existing clusters be part of the FMS work plan, that looking at clusters be an ongoing project. Again, that's a pretty stable variable, but as we get new judgeships, that might change.
Then you're done.
Yeah, okay. And then the third one, we do reject the recalculation of base funding only based on the principles that we tend to make adjustments as we go forward as opposed to looking backward and reassessing retroactively. So the presentation. I am done.
Okay. I do not see any rational reason that we continue to use clusters, which were developed in the 2000s when we didn't have a workload formula and others. We have them in place now. I have no objection to moving San Francisco to Cluster 3 if that's where they fit through our methodology. But I have heartburn with the methodology generally, and we don't have time to fix it today. But I have concerns because when you use the Program 90 as an example, and that was one of the reasons that San Francisco asked to go to Cluster 3, I will say it this way. Program 90 provides courts administrative structures around supervision of staff, right? It gives you management levels. It gives you administrators and managers and supervisors. And so by creating a span of control that's larger for larger courts, what you're saying is it's easier to supervise larger groups of people, that span of control, and there should be an assumption in that statement that you're all in the same courthouse. Because if what you're saying is it's easier for you to manage 25 people if you're bigger than 12 if you're smaller, you're making the assumption you're in the same courthouse. So I actually looked at my 39 courts and thought you would be interested to know that I have one courthouse that would be a Cluster 4, one courthouse that would be a Cluster 3, 32 courthouses that would be a Cluster 2, and 5 that would be a Cluster 1. If I applied the Program 90 to Los Angeles, recognizing you cannot supervise 25 people unless they're in the same courthouse, which is one Cluster 4, I would also get a significant increase in my Program 90. My point is this. We need to look at the entire process for how we are supplying the Program 90, because if I have five Cluster 1 courts, right, you can't tell me that I can supervise a large number of people when I have a two-judge court or a three-judge court out in Los Angeles. I have the same challenges in Los Angeles that the Cluster 1 courts do, except that you're not giving me the funds to hire those managers and supervisors and administrators. So the reason I'm saying this is it's time for us to say we're in a different world and we need to look at how this is being developed. And so I would support San Francisco's request to go into this new cluster. But as part of that motion, and that would be a motion, my second part of that motion would be that we put together a team that would also include people as well as judicial counsel staff to look at the methodology around the clusters and whether or not it makes sense related to what the intent was around primarily the Program 90 and maybe some of the other expenses as well. So it's a two-part motion that I would throw out there because I think that it's time for us to revisit how we are looking at the Program 90 in particular, and the clusters as well.
Yeah, David.
So I thank you very much. So I would support the recommendation to do further analysis in the designations that have been established relative to clustering. I agree that the basis for the creation of them has since changed when they were originally created. But I also recall several conversations that we've had over the last few years about courts wanting to move their cluster, but there has been no action. So the fact that San Francisco has proposition forward is a opportunity for us to pull this into our work plan to do further analysis on this. And if Sherry is making a motion, I would second the approach that she had proposed.
Well, let me ask a question of the two of you. Item six includes an update of the work plan. Would it make sense to bring that second part of your motion to...
It would, but I would not vote to move San Francisco unless I knew that there will be a review. That's why I tie them together, because to make an adjustment now, I think, seems to be fair, although if they hired back those 10 judicial officers, would it change? I don't know. I'm not going to ask, because that's not part of the program. But I think it feels right under the recommendation, and that's where they are. But I think that the reason, so if you take my motion, my second part of the motion in six first, and that approves above in moving San Francisco.
Okay. Judge Cope?
I that's why I can agree to that motion, because this is supposed to be a request to look at the workload formula and consider whether there's something about the formula that's inaccurate that needs to be fixed. So if we were just looking at San Francisco and saying its application in San Francisco is correct, then that's not a workload formula adjustment request, then it needs to be dealt with in a different way. I don't have any problem with moving San Francisco. Let me say that, but only if that's part of a larger consideration of a flaw in the system that needs to be corrected.
Sorry.
David.
Go ahead.
So the only other point that I want to make is that this body, and I think subsequently the Judicial Council, established specific criteria relating to those courts that have been deemed cluster ones. Mm-hmm. And so that obviously needs to be considered into whatever is being examined as well, because they are a one-off, and I don't know that you can look at just clusters 2, 3, and 4 without considering some of the basis for establishing the base funding formula there as well.
You're talking about floor funding?
Floor funding.
Okay.
So I think that needs to be part of it, too, because arguments can be made in a variety of different ways, so it's more of a comprehensive evaluation.
Okay.
And I just wanted to address Sherry's comment about if they add more judges. Sherry, part of the recommendation is to go back and reanalyze the clusters. So that sounds like it will be an ongoing review.
No, I get that.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Can I just clarify one word? And it's not judges, it's judicial positions. And so that's why she mentioned if they hired them back, because they're commissioners.
Judicial positions, so. Thank you.
And, you know, there are more, now, if courts want to change their authorized judicial position, mainly their commissioners, there's a process by which they have to go to EMP and request approval for a change, and it has to be on the basis of workload.
Right.
There very periodically have been requests that EMP have approved, and, for example, on their next agenda, they'll be looking at the pretrial grants and two positions that were early hired for that purpose. So there are... I think it would come to a committee before they could just add the positions back.
And I think when we review clusters, the first question is, why would you tie judicial positions to a staffing formula? So I think that, you know, I make the motion. Did you second it?
Can you restate the motion?
My motion is that we move San Francisco to cluster.
Well, let me only because let's look at page 41.
41.
And as you're getting there, it says here, we recommend in each of the paragraphs, let me suggest a modification, slight one, where it says FMS recommends each spot. We further FMS further recommends, and then finally, FMS recommends. So with that change, Chair, you're adding a paragraph?
Yes, that... you are on a roll, Judge Buckley, please.
Create a working group to reevaluate the cluster system and floor funding and add it to the work plan?
Yes.
You need to program any record.
Well, because
I don't know
we can,
generally speaking, is a good idea. But my emphasis on the Program 90 was as a result of San Francisco's letter. But with the examples that I gave you on how the Program 90 impacts me, with the assumptions that, you know, you can have a larger span of control.
It's within the clusters.
It is. Yep.
From your perspective, Brandy, Leah, is that language okay?
I think so. I would just question, Judge, if you want to name members of the working group now, or if we want to revisit that.
Well, the council doesn't approve. Do they approve that?
No, they don't.
My question was, is it the chairs of FMS that would do that, or is the chair to take that?
If it's an FMS work group, it's the co-chairs of FMS.
My thought is, let's have the recommendation we're going to approve be done, and then offline
yep.
chairs will
right.
do that.
So if what I would suggest, though, is if it's going to be a subgroup of this group, then call it a subcommittee rather than a working group.
Whatever
it's an ad hoc subcommittee, right. isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so one more time, it's create an ad hoc subcommittee
yep.
to reevaluate the cluster system and floor funding and add that project to the work plan. Yeah.
Can we say cluster group including Program 10 and Program 90 as well as floor funding?
Well, I feel like those fall into the workload.
Okay, there you go. Well, what do you mean by workload?
Well, I think the Program 90 and 10 and those ratios manager supervisor part of the workload formula.
Except that when you're separating courts and you're applying different ratios, that's part of what the problem is, and that's why I said I think we have concerns with it. If you're talking about the WAC side, because no, that's not part of the WAC side. We on the budget side say, oh, gee, you know, based on the Schedule 90, they can have a bigger span of control in a Cluster 4 than a Cluster 1. Oh, gee, based on the expenditure side, they can have a higher amount of per employee cost for consumable supplies in Cluster 2 than Cluster 3. So we make budget decisions around that. It has nothing to do with what's measured.
Yeah, okay.
So, create ad hoc subcommittee to reevaluate the cluster system.
And I guess if we all agree that Program 10 and 90 are included in that, I don't know if we need a specific.
I didn't hear anyone.
Okay.
And it may well be that the working of the ad hoc subcommittee as it's getting into the weeds,
sure.
may decide
yep.
that it has to expand it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So with that,
can you read it one more time?
Sure. As we're adding a paragraph.
Because you're reading my motion, right?
Yes.
So I'm paying attention.
We're adding a paragraph to page 41 that says create an ad hoc subcommittee to reevaluate the cluster system and for funding and add that project to the work plan.
I love my motion.
And it includes the we changing to FMS rating.
Yep.
Okay. The second,
second, but can I ask just point of clarification?
Yeah. Yeah.
So with respect to the first recommendation, that's not being acted upon.
Yes. No.
Yeah, it would be to move San Francisco into two parts.
But it goes to take back. Is that your question, David?
Yes.
Yes. That's why we're saying recommend.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Further, yes,
sorry, can I be a stickler one more time? Effective July 1, 2020?
2021 work plan item?
So, okay.
Oh, for
no, for San Francisco.
That part, okay.
San Francisco, yeah. I figure we could determine the year for the work plan when we get to that item, but it would be immediate for San Francisco.
Immediate
fiscal year.
Fiscal year, right?
So, in looking at the first paragraph, FMS recommends that San Francisco Superior Court's cluster system should be changed from cluster 4 to cluster 3, comma, effective July 1, 2020, comma, and then continue.
And that would still have the language of FMS tick back to recommendation.
Right. So, yeah, we're not doing the two steps.
Yeah.
They recommend.
Yeah.
Okay. Acceptable?
Yes.
Acceptable? Okay. Any further discussion? Go on the phone. Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So we will go now to number two, cluster two findings, which may have a different look to it.
So is
on page 21 of your materials.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the has been an ongoing request to look at cluster two in terms of its fit within the workload model. And is the model somehow adversely not meeting the needs of cluster two? So in 2018, SMS staff approached to look at this work plan item to, one, review the clusters overall to determine if the current clusters are still the appropriate grouping, and then to review cluster two specifically to identify any factors that may play a role in how the workload model impacts cluster two cores. What we discussed for San Francisco, the four-cluster model was developed in the early 2000s for use in the resource assessment study, and it was primarily informed based on the number of eight authorized judicial positions, the judges and SJOs. Again, courts were ranked by their AJPs and then grouped into those four clusters. Cluster one were the two-judge courts, and then the remaining three clusters based on clear breaks in the number of AJPs. And we assessed the, I'll just jump to, we just talked about this in this graph, we assessed the AJPs based on 2004, 2005, as well as 2019 and 2020. We also looked at it based on RAF FTE needs. Again, the clusters, if we use the exact same methodology and we use the same, updated data, we would see a similar breakout of clusters, again, except for San Francisco. San Francisco, based on the way that we currently look at clusters using AJP, San Francisco would be more appropriately fit in cluster three. No change to cluster two. Looked at it by RAF FTE, a similar finding. No change to cluster two, but that changed to San Francisco. Looking at how we do clustering now, there wouldn't be a change. So when we go to looking at cluster two specifically and addressing that question, is there anything that is adversely affecting cluster two when we look at the model, we looked at different aspects. We looked at how we assess need and then how we at their final funding level. And just as kind of background or characteristics, there are 22 courts in cluster two. It's the largest cluster in terms of the number of courts. Their AJP ranges from 4.3 to 15. And their RAF FTE need ranges from 36 to 166. They're primarily, they are dispersed throughout the state, but they're primarily up in the northern part of the state. So in terms of estimating need, what we were drawn to, and this was originally a part of the request to, when we were asked to look at cluster two, was to look at VLF. And on average, cluster two, if we look at their overall need and their allocation, cluster two has the lowest per WAFM FTE need. And the factors that impact that primarily are VLF. So they tend to have the cluster two courts. They kind of rank following size. Cluster one has the lowest VLF if you looked at an average all the way up through cluster four. So they follow the size of the courts in terms of their average VLF, even though we don't use an average VLF. We use their individual VLF. There are six courts in VLF with a 0.80 or lower, but there's also, it's a large cluster. There are seven courts that have over one VLF. The cluster one, as I noted, has the lowest average VLF, but there are other factors that go into cluster one that alters how their allocation and their need. OE&E, they have a very large OE&E that impacts their needs, and then other factors in terms of allocation put them higher. It's maybe a little easier to see in this graph. On the top, we have the WAFM FTE need and then allocation, and those are by cluster. So as you can see, in both the need and the allocation, cluster two is the lowest. That being said, everything, so we looked at different aspects of and there's nothing that systematically improves cluster two. there are courts with a low BLS, whether that's right or wrong, how we looked at the data did not change the overall cluster. That we couldn't find any one thing that the model impacted cluster two on a entire cluster level. Are there any questions about kind of about the need or BLS? We also looked at their funding level. So we started this prior to the influx of funding to the branch. And so the funding levels now, there are to WAFM needs. So, and also cluster two courts fare slightly better than cluster three when we look at overall funding levels. And we can kind of see that in this graph. So when we look at funding levels, we don't see a huge disparity in cluster two.
Can I grab page 25 or 49, which I think is?
Again, cluster one, it's showing that 118 because of the two small courts, but they're at 100% as we know for funding. Cluster two is at 84%, cluster three is at 82%, and cluster four is at 86%. And in looking at kind of the variables that go into assessing needs, we didn't see a systematic approach or a systematic flaw in the methodology that impacted cluster two. Again, looking at BLS, they are lower, but they're, again, it goes from cluster one to cluster four, lowest BLS, cluster one, two, three, four. But no change in BLS impacts cluster two altogether. If you make one shift, other courts are impacted. So that is what we found with cluster two.
If you look at the page 21, the issue, it says that the work plan item was, and it's in italics, evaluate the cluster two Bureau of Labor Statistics and Small Court Adjustment Contributions. And listen, it's a presentation by Kristen and the summary and so forth. This is an action item. Let me throw out that what I hear the staff saying and what our maybe a motion would be, approve the recommendation by staff that no further work be done to, you know, it's just going to be the language that's in the issue, evaluate the Cluster 2 Bureau of Labor Statistics and Small Court Adjustment Contributions. The action that we take?
I mean, that sounds right. I think the analysis you did was really very good.
It was. Definitely was.
Yeah.
So, entertain a motion with that language.
To make another motion that you wrote on my behalf.
Okay, so moved in second. Any discussion?
Just to point out the cluster three courts, speaking on behalf of my brother and sister courts in cluster three.
What page are you on?
I'm looking on page 25.
Okay.
This is an interesting illustration of what appears to be a definitely a disadvantage at the anyway, that just jumped out to me. I want
another good reason to look at the clusters, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay. With that comment,
and it's an editorial comment. So nothing touches it.
Any further discussion? Okay. Was there a second? Yes, there was. Rebecca.
Yes.
All in favor?
Okay.
All right. Any opposed? Okay.
Okay, that was more enthusiastic in the beginning. Item three on the court interpreter program funding shortfall and update on methodology.
Good morning. Item three of today's agenda is the consideration of a recommendation to use unrestricted fund balance from the trial court trust fund to address the 2021 projected funding shortfall amount of approximately $11.1 million in the court interpreter program for consideration by the trial court budget advisory committee at its March 19, 2020 meeting. As has been the case for some time, appropriated court interpreter funds continue to be insufficient to fully reimburse trial courts for their program costs. So please turn to page 28 of your materials. This is the second table. You'll note that we're currently projecting $138.8 million in reimbursable court interpreter program expenditures for fiscal year 2021. That being said, you'll note the governor's proposed appropriation for that year is roughly $129.8 million. The projected expenditure amount does include estimated wage growth on ratified agreements, continued civil expansion through 2021, increases in the number of mandated staff interpreters and mandated contractor usage, and merit salary adjustments. In an effort to address the need for ongoing resources, it is our recommendation that FMS approve the allocation of up to $11.1 million of unrestricted fund balance from the TCTF to address the projected 2021 shortfall. And for that recommendation, for consideration by TIGBAC again at its March 19 meeting. In the meantime, the Interpreter Ad Hoc Subcommittee will continue its work in conjunction with Judicial Council Budget Services and Business Management Services offices to consider options that will help further optimize fund resources and address future potential shortfalls. The good news is we're also pursuing budget change proposal options for 2021 and beyond, so we can hopefully get out of these recurring issues.
Any questions? The recommendation is on page 30.
Yes.
And it's a recommendation that we make to TIGBAC. Entertain a motion.
This is Yamasaki. I would move approval of the recommendation.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Can I make one point?
Of course.
So one of the areas of concern was to determine if the fund condition could support this usage, and there were assurances that $11.1 million is within at a level that could be handled by the fund balances currently in the Alco Trust Fund. So that was something that was confirmed, and I think it's long ago.
You can see on page 32 of the package, it has the information to that point, and it assumes the 13 is card is restricted and is available. Unrestricted fund balance appears sufficient in 2021 at this juncture. Clearly, if things in the revenues realm were to change, we would come back to this committee and revisit the recommendation. But as it stands now, based on projections, we have sufficient fund balance. Yes, thank you.
Let me ask a question. What is the estimated time frame for the ad hoc subcommittee to come back?
Look, if we're aiming for implementation, not July 1 of the fall and July 1, 2021. So currently the ball is in KCC's staff, of course. Budget Services is working with OCR and kind of reviewing all of the data we have available. What information is in SAP? What information does the Schedule A provide us? What's in CIBCS before we
which
get
is
back?
That?
Which everything in the kitchen sink, apparently. So right now we're just kind of using looking at what data is there and what is useful or not. So we do owe you guys, I'm looking at the three, the people in the ad hoc here, Sherry, David, and my planet, owe you guys an update, hopefully within the next month or two.
I don't know you're
friends with David.
What happens when you sit next to David?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I just want to point out the God bless the language access, you know, work group and all and everything that they're doing there. But these new mandates, for lack of a better word, coming out of OFP are creating this whole new workload for us that's just, it concerns me that the recommendations come out with really without any kind of fiscal analysis of it. Maybe that's our fault, but the language access is just further added, added to the pile of funding issues related with providing interpreters. That's just going to continue to be a problem. And without some resolution on that, what the fiscal impact of these changes are, some way of responding to those, this is going to continue to be, the shortfall is going to continue.
And I would add, I think that's why the work of the subcommittee on a revised methodology has to recognize that this is not a limitless funding flow. There will be a time where the budget will, given the constraints as it is in the potential recessionary times, where there won't be an increasing revenue, and also there won't always be necessarily, as we're spending down the TPTF fund balance here, there's going to be convergence where we have to really ensure that we are looking at managing the resources and looking at how we manage the expenses, because this is not just a limitless revenue source between general fund augmentations in the budget and track or trust fund revenues.
Right, and I guess I'm just saying, you can't just control expenses and add workload on and expect those two just aren't going to balance out. As I recall, the kind of expansion of the interpreter service really came around when we had a surplus of that fund.
Yes.
And I remember myself and Sherry and among others saying, we know what's going to happen. We're going to run out of money, and then
that was my public statement in 2013.
And then we'll have to cut down services, right? And it's just now it's turned from a $4 million surplus to a $11 million deficit. So
the other thing that I would add also is, of course, are struggling to. In addition to what Mike just mentioned, struggling to locate interpreters in all those areas. So there is definitely going to be a need to be very creative and coming up with solutions to try to provide the services that were expressed as part of the LAP.
And I would add that, given that the budget also reflects funding for video remote interpreting equipment, that is also, I think, an acknowledgement by the administration and the governor's budget that those types of tools need to be part of the solution in looking at the provision of interpreter services, especially in remote locations, and how you can use that technology and the appropriate methods.
Well, I would say it's not even just remote locations anymore. The intensity of interpretation that is necessary on all areas, it really goes beyond just remote locations. I think technology is really going to be the answer to a lot of these issues that all of the parties would look to as a solution.
I think it's important to remind everyone that trial courts are funded based on workload. And so when we start talking about allocation reductions to pay for statewide initiatives, whether it's jury payments or interpreter payments, I think it's important to remind all of us that it is taking money out of workload, funding for workload that does not include these tasks. And the reason I'm saying that is that BCPs are, I'm really glad that we're doing that, because workload is something that we can try to help manage, but when it comes to things like who walks in the door and what language they speak and if there's an expectation to provide that service, that is not something that can be managed. And so there has to be solutions other than just talking about allocations to a formula that's based on workload that does not include these statewide initiatives. So I'm saying that. I know it's obvious to all of us, but it might be less obvious to people who might be on the phone about how we're funded and structured.
Okay, so we have a pending motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Next item is methodologies about for allocation of proposed trial court funding. Sandy, is that you?
That's me. All right, so there are two new funding proposals in the 2020-21 governor's budget. We're taking a proactive approach on allocation recommendations, assuming that the funding will remain in the final 2020 budget act as proposed. So recommendations by the subcommittee today would go before the trial court budget advisory committee in May and then for council consideration in July. And July is when we take all of the other trial court allocation recommendations to the council for approval. So first, there is an ongoing $61.7 million for general trial court operational costs statewide in recognition of the annual cost increases in maintaining existing service levels. This proposed amount is equivalent to an overall 3% increase, and it was calculated using the current year's workload formula allocation amount. So each trial court allocation, take 3% of that amount, and that's roughly how the $61.7 million was calculated. Next is for $45.9 million in ongoing funding to promote fiscal equity among the trial court. So before we move on to the recommendations for each of these funding proposals, we would like to remind the subcommittee of the Judicial Council policy related to non-sheriff court security. So in summary, for any new general fund augmentation received, trial courts with court-provided non-sheriff security would be provided funding based on the same gross funding percentage that the county sheriff received. So this fiscal year, we received $24.5 million for the cost of the 25 new judge shifts. Of that amount, we took $455,000 off the top and provided it to the 39 eligible courts that provide that non-sheriff security. Good so far? Okay. So there are two recommendations for consideration as it relates to the $61.7 million. And this is on page 37 of your materials. Both of the recommendations, A and B, they support a methodology to allocate funds similar to how that 61.7 was determined. This is through a percentage increase based on each court's 2019-20 workload formula allocation. So we're proposing to still stay within the, hey, well, they calculated it using 3% of your allocation from this year. We want to stick with that approach. The only difference between the recommendations is whether or not to take non-sheriff security funding into consideration. So the second recommendation, there's just one recommendation, C, for $45.9 million, and this is to follow the current process that we use in first reducing an amount for security funding and then allocating the remaining dollars via the workload formula methodology. All I have, but happy to take questions and discuss each one further.
If I understood it right, in a way, the 61.7B happens and then we go to A.
So with B.
B. Well, A is not considering security. B is considering security. DOF did it the way
right.
in which
so
the DOF did it the way A, DOF methodology is effectively A, and then B is DOF but modified with the security adjustment.
Correct.
And so,
so we would take a little off the top in B,
okay.
Give it out to 39 courts for security, and then allocate what's remaining.
So given what you stated, that it's the council's policy that security is taking off at the top, why do we even have a, what's the thinking of having a proposal that does not have that?
And I would push this one, is because the DOF methodology wasn't considering that, and so in terms of their view of looking at how that methodology would go, it was 3% to all the courts per this methodology. So we're looking at presenting the way in which the Department of Finance did the math in this case versus the 45.9 million was clearly identifying using our existing methodology. So there was a difference in why they separated the dollars, one inflationary going to all courts and one being the equity workload funding that they would see us using our workload formula for. So that's why there's a distinction. And in light of the fact that there's inflationary costs going to all courts, one could conceivably say that they could inflate their, you know, add this to their security line item, and that would be there, and then there would be a security line item coming out of the 45.9 as the natural judicial counsel action. So that's the distinction between DOF approach on that, and then DOF approach on the second, but making it clear that it's going for the judicial counsel workload formula that accounts for cluster one courts, security, and all those adjustments that we do.
So to clarify too, Rocco, as you mentioned, all courts, we do have a recommendation to not give any of the $61.7 million to the funding for courts, Alpine and Sierra. They're currently capped at $800,000, and we have a method in place, and it's on the work plan, where we touch base with them every year and give them an opportunity to request any increase that they need.
And that was explained to the Department of Finance as well, and they understood why it would be 56 instead of 58 within the math.
And just so you know, they did not ask for an increase this last time around when they had an opportunity.
Is it the council's preference that we give them a definitive recommendation versus, hey, you all have decided you take security off the top?
We recommended it, though.
Yeah. Pardon?
We recommended
it. No, I understand. Okay. But what I hear Zlatko saying is that the A approach is to... respond to what we believe is the direction of the DOF or the decision making.
The math, yeah. I mean,
the math.
I don't think it's direction. I think it's just a mathematical 3%.
Right.
I mean, options are always open to the council to come from. Encouraged as well if there's opportunities to, for lack of consensus.
I guess what I'm saying is just lay it out, the two options, and let the council decide which its policy is. But if the preference of the council is that we make a definitive recommendation, that's fine. Why don't I just ask, why let's get a sort of a head count of whether we want, the majority wants A versus B, and then that can direct us on the motion.
Before we do that, one of the, so this is just kind of maybe splitting hairs a little bit, but I have a little bit of an issue with, going one way or the other on the security and yet following our policy on the funding for courts. It feels like we're picking and choosing when we want to follow it. And so I think we should either put forward a recommendation that follows the math, the straight math of the Department of Finance, or that we put forward the recommendation that says this is the amount calculated based on the math, and this is how they did it, but this is our policy. I don't think we should go one way or one way for one piece of it and the other way for the other piece of it.
So it's either 3% to all courts, period.
Exactly.
Or take security off and then
and follow
3%,
right.
Those two courts do not get the 3%.
Right.
Those are the two options.
And frankly, my feeling on this is complicated by the fact that the base cluster courts are part of it, because I feel like we're now we look like we're splitting hairs or being, you know, picking and choosing.
So just a point of clarification. So if I'm understanding, because we're kind of taking it to terms, is that no consideration be given towards increasing security costs for those courts that have this provision that is not consistent with the vast majority of the courts, which are security funds, correct?
As to the 61.
Okay. So one of the things that was very, I remember vividly, was the absence of a mechanism to address that increase was very, very debilitating for those courts, because they would otherwise have to absorb that reduction out of their budget. So while I understand that there's been a lot of discussion about trying to slice this into multiple pieces, there's no other mechanism for them to cover those costs unless it's coming out of their budget, because that's how the mechanism currently sits, that the courts fund it. So that's why I'm a little concerned about not recognizing a carve-out to cover the increase in the security fund. Did I confuse you?
No, I think I remember that discussion back at that time, and that was why we did it at the time.
there was no other opportunity.
Now I say that with the reality that courts today are struggling to fund the current expense level for security, but that money sits in those courts that are affected by that are sitting with the county.
Right.
This is money that it goes to the court for security.
Right.
So I don't know that we're in the same situation. We're in the same situation as it relates to the deficiency in having funding for security. But the remedy today is courts, you have to pay the shortfall. We're not in the same situation for those other courts. So that's why I think there's a little bit of a difference in the separating it in the way that we're discussing.
Another thought is that in approaching concept of a built-in cost of living increases, we really were looking at a set percentage increase. And so not only is it consistent with what we understand DOF calculated, but as to what came out of this subcommittee was these courts need an X percent increase just to cover out-of-pocket increases in cost with or without security, and ideally get it on a permanent basis. It's not there yet. But we go to the goal of this subcommittee, and then ultimately a TIFAC, was just take an X percent and across the board, period, and then help get increased funding for the workloads. And we have that. And it may well, I don't think it'd be inconsistent in later years. If we don't get two pots of money, we only get one pot, then we might address it differently and maybe in the security. I just throw that out.
Can I ask you a point of clarification? I think you said cost of living increases. I think what you're referring to is inflationary cost increases.
That's correct. Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we have, let's work our way up on the 45.9. Do we have why don't we break the motions up? And unless there's some discussion or questions, entertain a motion to approve the 45.9 recommendation.
I'll move approval of option B.
B, yes.
Recommendation C, as stated.
Planet seconds. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So, do we have a consensus that the two options that we've reached now are 3% across the board to all courts, all 58 courts, or the option is a take off the top the security funding and then 3% to everyone except for the two courts of Alpine and CR? Is that where we are as far as the options?
I believe so.
And to help maybe the first motion, by a show of hands, how many would prefer 3%? This is not a motion. This is county of hands. How many would prefer just a 3% across the top for all courts with no allocation for security? And how many for this other option? Okay. May I hear a motion, please?
I will move what you said, that we distribute the $61.7 million with a carve-out on the security and setting aside the two bottom cluster courts.
So what we're doing is really saying the first clause of the approve a recommendation that includes an initial reduction for security funding, and then approve a recommendation that gives each trial court Alpine and Sierra, a 3% increase based on their 2019-20 workload formula allocation.
Can I make one suggested change? I'm assuming that before we do the final allocations for the 2021 fiscal year, the filing statistics will be updated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the reason I would not name the floor funding courts by name is filings may adjust who would also fall into that category. And so I would say those courts eligible for floor funding because we don't know how the filings will change.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be my suggested.
So B, with the exception of the courts that
are entitled, are eligible, however you want to word it, to floor funding.
I would accept that.
And I would second that one.
Okay. Brandon, we'll start with you. You're set on the language?
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any questions as to what the language does in B, though, via the pro rata approach? So initially, when courts get a 3% of the $61.7 million, they're getting a percentage of that $61.7. I would apply that same percentage to what's left after we pull security funding.
Yeah, it's going to be like 2.975%.
Right, yeah, it's going to be minimal.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure we're all clear on that approach and that that's okay.
Okay.
I think, was it, Carrie, did you make the motion? I'm sorry.
No,
Rebecca, thank you.
First of all, everyone on the same page. We all know what we're going to be talking about and or approving. I'm asking whether you don't know what you don't know. And then any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And we are on to item six. Lockville Company Methodology Subcommittee Work Plan.
Yeah, so this is the time for us to review the work plan, which is, you can see the current version is on page 48, attachment 6A. You can see in the materials what we'd like to recommend that you consider as updates. So we think first, mark is complete for 1920 items three, which is related to the workload formula adjustment for submitted by Alvarado and Mendocino. Number five, which was develop an allocation to 50%, which we did in the January council meeting. And number six, since at this point it was not presented and provided as that in the governor's budget. We had a different approach, and so this was pending a CPI-based adjustment in the budget. And so we would say those, because obviously number six may come at a future date depending on what work we have with the administration for future inflationary costs. Because if you recall in the budget, there was a mention that they would work with the branch to deal with these costs on a go-forward basis. So we would recommend that those three be reflected as completed.
So
the first recommendation.
Based on today, are one and two?
And that was, and then I say, well, one and two are in progress, assuming that they do make it ultimately through the council.
Okay.
So I say that in theory, staff have completed it, FMS will have completed its work, but, you know, pending the final work through the tick back in the council, those would be considered approved and completed once approved by the council. So maybe we could
stop there?
Yeah.
Okay. Any disagreement with that?
Clarification, where will you add the new item? Is that going to go on to the end of this fiscal year, or is it going to go, because it's only February. We have lots of time, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
the cluster review.
I'm going to refer to Leah on that one.
I hope you have talked
to. I know.
Yeah.
What do we start doing?
Yeah, this is February. We got lots of time this year.
This calendar for
this fiscal year.
Before June?
I'm not saying it'll be completed, but I would hate to have us just put it on 2021 and take a breath until July to start the work, because I think most of the work will actually be at the trial court level and not the judicial council level.
Okay. I would personally advocate for pushing it only because we're still cleaning up the adjustment request that we received from the last year. We've got presentations on or work being done on the Monterey ARP, on one from LA and
San Diego.
San Diego, thank you.
So you're talking now on the this committee or on the WAC side?
On the WAC side, yeah.
Yeah.
The same staff. We have the same individuals working. I think we could definitely get it started, but I probably would advocate for it.
Yeah, the bulk of the work might happen, but I would just, my experience is to put it on for next year.
Right.
Our meeting will be in August. That'll remind our chairs that they have to appoint people. It'll take a while of time to get the first call together. I would propose that it be placed on this year's
so that we start at least identifying who's going to be on it, have a first call, assign who's going to be collecting what at the trial court level, not impacting your work yet. But I would just hate to have it slip another 6 months.
Can we then maybe, because I think that's what number two is adding to that, maybe initiate, put it under 2021 or 21, 22.
No.
First of all, I mean, what you're saying is a later item is added.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
so
sure.
That's what we're talking about, I think, is the trick.
And
then we can indicate when it's initiated and when it's expected to be completed, so that we're not waiting until the next fiscal year.
You want to clear your chart first before you add to it. Yep. Okay.
So that's 19-20, any disagreement that 1 and 2 and 4 stay and 3 and 5 are deemed completed. Any objection to that?
Yep.
Okay. So then we go to 2021 as far as just keeping it on. Is that the purpose, or are we on to the recommendation two of adding stuff?
We are on to the adding, but I think Rebecca raised the issue of we effectively today talked about numbers 1 and 2, okay, and whether or not we may be modifying number 1 to say that numbers 1 and 2 are assumed to be completed once approved by the council, and then they can come off. So that when we get here in the fall and we look at the work plan, they can be removed for what we had done.
Okay. And then
so that might be a modification to.
So the only one that should remain is 4.
Is 4.
The,
right.
Methodology. Yes. And we have a group on that.
Yes.
Okay. Again, any disagreement? I mean, we need a motion on that.
Okay.
Now we move to recommendation number 2 on page 47.
Which is add any new items that should be added. And this came from the discussion of cluster 2 is look at the cluster change. So we had the extensive alternative, more detailed motion that you have in terms of BLS, small courts, and all those things that I think are part of now what is number 2. And now we're debating the timing of what Sherry suggested should start immediately. And I think one of my reactions was that is good to do. It's whether or not it's expected to be completed by the end of the year. No. So does that need to be maybe accounted for as initiating the 19-20 fiscal year to be completed in the 2021 fiscal year?
We have a foot completion date.
We don't. I think if we want to word it to say initiate ad hoc subcommittee cluster two work or cluster structure work. I mean.
Right. It does then push the chairs to at least start the process.
Yeah.
And I expect at least one, if not both chairs, to be on this subcommittee. And
I
have
never wanted to push you.
No, my expectation. And I think we can have our continued candid conversations with staff that it might be going too fast, or we need to move certain things to something.
And I don't think chairs have to be on working groups because it comes back to the group.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I think just given this one, it might be.
Up to you.
So we'll work on that. But either way, anyone disagree that we had the 19-20, what was the buzzword, initiate? Or what was the
I said initiate, but.
Okay, initiate a ad hoc subcommittee to reevaluate the cluster system and for funding that period. Any disagreement with that? Does that sound like that require an action? Is that a motion?
I will second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none? Next, anything else?
And then number 3 is determining which fiscal year each item should be addressed in order of priority.
Whether or not we historically, if we don't believe we'll complete, say number 4, the support interpreter issue in 19-20, does that move into 2021 or we leave it as a 19-20 work item?
Waco, can I interrupt? There was something on Kristen's report that suggested a reevaluation of clusters to be added to the work plan. Does that capture
that
what
exists.
Was just added?
Yeah, because I think that was the second paragraph of the San Francisco issue.
Should we see like an ongoing reevaluation, or are we good as it stated that?
I think it's subsumed into this new project, whatever we call it.
I would not change the interpreter item to the next year until then. I think we need to keep pushing as hard as we can.
Sorry.
are there any changes to numbers 7, 8, and 9 otherwise?
Hearing none?
All right.
Okay.
Great.
Any new business? Anything else we need to discuss?
I'd love to spend more time with you.
I'm out of here.
Okay, we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us on the phone.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.